This is a replay of the Wednesday night, March 25th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. Love to hear from you. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, as long as it has absolutely nothing consequential to the discussion, yeah, no political or anything like that, we'll take it on. Doesn't matter what the topic was. Now, we have engineer Bob, who is keeping us on the air tonight. And Bob has a second role as far as I'm concerned. He sends me just the best links. All right, I mourn to this day and will always continue to mourn the passing of Carol Ford. But one of the things Carol had done for me was give me a lot of links of things to talk about. And I'll tell you what, Bob has filled that role admirably as far as coming up with that. Now, we're not knowing which R&B artist just dropped dead or anything like that, but we are finding out what we used to eat for breakfast. And the most interesting thing about this that I found was I always thought that, like, Kellogg's was the first with cornflakes and then later granola. Well, it turned out, no. It actually was granula, if you will. That was the first cold breakfast cereal. It was in 1863 in Dansville, New York. A nutritionist who ran a health spa came up with this, believing that a healthy diet would cure any illness. And it was interesting as far as granula, if you will. It was gram flour baked into hard cakes, then crumbled, then baking again, and well, the second time, I guess, was the killer because the crumbled bits were so hard they were inedible. But if you soaked them overnight in milk, the cereal became edible, and so the crunchy breakfast cereal was on the market, obviously with some reservations. But that's when John Harvey Kellogg, who later invented cornflakes, came up with the idea of cornmeal, oatmeal, and wheat flour to make his own granola. The reason he called it granola was he was calling it granula, and Jackson sued him for using the granula name, James Kellogg Jackson. So he changed it to granola, and it's around to this day, one way or another. But do we still eat it? I think we do. I don't know why it's on the list myself. Although we didn't eat it as granula anymore, but granola, yeah, that's still available. Milk toast. Now, this was interesting, I thought, because actually the word milquetoast, meaning a timid or ineffectual person, was derived from this. Well, of course, it was derived from a cartoon, Caspar Milquetoast, in 1924. But the reason Caspar Milquetoast bore that name was in tribute to this quintessential comfort food, so they say. New England breakfast dish. Late 1800s, early 1900s, it worked out this way. You poured warm milk over bread that had been toasted, buttered, and then cubed. And the dish could be served sweet or savory, depending on what you added to it, like sugar or vanilla or cinnamon or paprika, you know, salt or pepper. And so that was milquetoast, and hence the word milquetoast. And we know some people who fit the bill, but I don't think we've actually encountered the food in quite a while, though French toast seemingly is pretty damn close. All right, then there's pork and beans, which, of course, we're eating to this day, but maybe not as breakfast. Originally, it was sold, in fact, in an 1886 cookbook, Practical Housekeeping. Estelle Woods Wilcox recommends adding a few tablespoons of molasses and salt to pork in a pot of baked beans, baking it for 6 hours. In fact, overnight is preferable, and this is the Yankee dish for Sunday breakfast. Eaten cold or not. Then there was codfish. Now, obviously, we all know about cod, and we know it can be breaded and fried and all that, but you might not have realized that it was originally a breakfast food. In fact, the Waldorf Astoria, yes, on their luxury 1914 breakfast menu, offered codfish and cream for 50 cents. Fanny Farmer's 1960 Boston Cooking School cookbook included recipe for cream, salt, codfish, fish balls, and salted codfish hash. So the recipes all called for, I loved this, picking codfish in very small pieces or cutting it using scissors. Oh man, I'd like to see that kitchen. Salted and cured shredded codfish was also packaged and advertised as a dainty and sweet-flavored fish. The price was naturally high because of the limited quantity of high-quality cod for breakfast. Then there was meat hash. And breakfast hash, of course, has been around forever and still eaten today in various forms, to say the least. But it was the wartime that really got this to the forefront. In fact, Armour and Company, the first company to produce canned meat, Spam anybody, reminded Americans that our war needs make it vital now to save every bit of food left over. They handed out a free booklet, 69 meat ration recipes, including breakfast hash, using a variety of fresh and canned meats. But the bottom line for this was chopped cooked meat left over from dinner. Oh, yum. Yeah, so there you have it. Enough of that. 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And I've got several of your requests to play, including a couple songs also about people who are having birthdays today. Yeah. Gave me an excuse. I'll play the five satins. Yeah. All right. But Robert wants to add to the list. So, all right. Robert, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Raleigh. This has a little bit of a theme. It's I call it All About Barbara. I like to hear I Know by Barbara George.
Oh, a good song.
Yeah, and Barbara Lewis, Hello Stranger.
Okay.
And for the third one, the original, I think it's the original, Barbara Ann by the Regents.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, and that's it for now. I just call it All About Barbara, you know.
Well, there's a Bobby V record about Barbara, too. I'm glad you didn't think of it.
All right. please don't ask about. Yeah, no, that's all right.
But interesting, Barbara George, and of course she's famous for I Know, though my favorite is probably When You Talk About Love, and of course Barbara Lewis, yeah. So many good things. But sure, I'll play your trifecta. Probably not tonight, but I will definitely do that.
That was I Know that I asked for.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. I know. Like I say, that would not be my choice for Barbara George, but I'll be happy to play it.
Okay, thanks a lot,
Raleigh.
All right,
good deal, yeah. Thanks. All right, so it was a big hit, so why not? 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I am kind of culling your requests and getting them in order and playing several, and you'll hear some, including some stuff also that I just wanted to play. David in Muskegon, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yes, hey, I had a question for you. You know, KNEW AM 960 is owned by iHeartRadio. What is KNEW sister stations in San Francisco, California? What are their formats?
Well, first, KNEW was 910, and I'm aware of 960, which, of course, became cable and all that, but KNEW was originally 910, and that was an outgrowth of KEWB, which was the Kroll Collier station. But you want to know what does iHeart own in San Francisco?
Yeah, because it says it's an iHeartRadio station, now KNEW.
It is. Yeah, they're talk. They got K101, which I think they probably call Star 101.3. They got 98.1, The Breeze, the old KMEL 106.1.
What's the format there?
Urban. They have 103.7, which is kind of a classic hits thing. I'm trying to think of the call letters, but it's 103.7. I'm doing this off the top of my head, which isn't good, but 94.9 was Wild. That's top 40. And 910, which is the old KNEW, that's KKSF now, and that's BIN, Black Information Network. And KNEW now at 960, which had been cable and a number of other things, is sports talk. So I think that's all there is. I could be leaving someone out, but those are the seven that I can recall.
Oh, so iHeartRadio does not even own a classic rock or radio station in San Francisco.
The 103.7 would be classic hits. I guess that's like classic rock. I don't know.
Okay, 103.7. What's the call letters to that?
I think it's KOSF, but you'd have to look it up. I think it's KOSF.
Okay, I'd have to look that up, because when Fran was talking about that radio station, it used to be a daytime station, didn't it?
Well, no, not the FM. You're talking about 960 or 910 or what?
I mean, 910.
910, I don't think they were a daytimer, but their history is interesting. That was bought originally, it came into life, not bought, by the Oakland newspaper there. And they sold it in 59 to Kroll Collier. And by the way, when the Oakland Tribune signed it on, it was KLX. And, when KEWB became 1959, came to life, that was top 40. And it was 24 hours. And everybody from Gary Owens to Casey Kasem to Don McKinnon, who was probably the real standout talent. If he hadn't been killed, everybody would know about Don McKinnon. But Bobby Dale was there. Of course, Real Don Steele and Robert W. Morgan. And Don Bowman worked there for a while. And Chuck Bloor programmed it, like all of the Kroll Collier stations. And so I think Collier Magazine, which is Kroll Collier, bought it for like $750,000. Anyway, they sold it to Metro Media, and that is when it became KNEW. And ultimately, KNEW became country. And that was interesting, too, when they did that. They weren't always. I think they switched to country in 1980. And around 1982, they had this big promotion. We all came out of the closet for country, and I still have the little hanger pins they sent out and all that, trying to do that. So that was interesting. But so, you know, you're confusing two stations, the 960 and the 910, but all this stuff is available online if you look for it, I'm sure, because these are legendary radio stations.
Okay, so that was top 40 for 21 years, it sounds like, KNEW.
Yeah, but and then it wasn't, right. And they bought it, I think, oh gosh, when did it go top 40? 66, maybe? Well, actually, KEWB was definitely top 40. So KNEW continued top 40 for a while and then switched to country.
Oh, okay. Okay, so before it was KNEW, what was the call letters again?
KEWB.
KEWB, from 59 to 66.
No, yes, they bought it in 59 from the newspaper, and arguably that 59 to 66 period was the real period of that frequency. The amount of legendary personalities on it, like I mentioned some of them, it was huge. So
Casey Kasem, Don Steele.
Yeah, well, Robert W. Morgan and...
I remember him.
Well, of course, Gary Owens and, you know, on and on and on. So, yeah, KEWB was the real deal and an absolutely wonderful radio station. Like everything that Chuck Bloor touched, it was just wonderful. You know, because it was KEWB, KFWB in Los Angeles, and KDWB in Minneapolis.
Okay. And so now... after it became KNEW, did they slide as far as music quality? When
oh,
it was
well, you know that's an opinion, you know, and I won't make a definitive statement on that. I will say that when you talk about the Don McKinnons of the world, who was absolutely a legendary personality that you don't know because of course he died, but actually Michael Jackson, the guy, became the talk show host. He actually was. Was there as well for a while, playing records, and on and on, and it was terrific. And so it had been KLX, like I say, 910, and then they bought it. They turned it top 40, 91 KEWB, and then Metro Media bought it in 66, and that's when. But all this stuff, you can probably hear air checks of all these people because you're talking legendary radio stations here.
Yes,
you know, so you can find that. Just search.
Okay, they have to search for find the air checks. Now, where would I find the air checks at?
You know, again, just do a Google search. And if you want KEWB, 91 KEWB, or I think the Bay Area Radio Museum hosts some of those air checks, and same thing for KNEW. These are easy because these are legendary radio stations. So these are easy. And then, of course, you know, Metro Media sold KNEW to Mallright in 1980. That's when, after a while, they were country before. I think about 74 they were country, but then when Mallright bought it, they really really promoted the hell out of it.
Okay, so they went country in 74.
And
KNEW did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 74. Yeah, because I was promoting records back then, and I'm pretty sure it was 74. Thereabouts. But again, you can read it for absolute because there is no shortage of stories on these radio stations. And I'm looking.
Okay, and I'd have to have somebody Google it because I have Alexa. I don't think I could get that on my Fire tablet.
You'll figure it out your own way. But I just went to BayAreaRadio.org. And they have several KEWB air checks.
BayAreaRadio.org, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, neat! Because
you'll see
radio
it
is my thing.
Yeah, I can tell.
BayAreaRadio.org.
Yep.
Because what I'm thinking here is BayAreaRadio.org. Because what Fran was describing, I'm in Michigan here, was like WTOD in Toledo.
Yeah.
You know, half the top 40 was Seoul.
Well, all right.
And
so
I understand
all that, and I got to go. Check it out. The world will be your oyster, and if you don't find it there, you'll find it on YouTube. All right. Thanks.
Oh.
Appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Yeah, you see, I have Bob in master control, and he'll keep me in line. He'll say, stop talking right about now on WGN Radio.
You'll want to do Sea Crane.
Oh, no, he wants me to do the Sea Crane read. Oh, my. It's in the printer. So John's going to hand it. And Bob even got me copy. All right. Screwing up this break. And, I love talking about the Sea Crane Company. We're talking about the CC Radio 3, which we were talking about last night and the night before. And I love this radio. It's John's bedside companion. And I always say that if you listen primarily for voice content, it's arguably worth the price alone. But with baseball season opening this week, man, if you want to listen and feel like you're right at the ball field, this is the best way to do it. The CC Radio 3 catch every pitch, every swing, every exciting play-by-play call. And you will experience the game as if you were right there. Audio quality for the spoken word sounds just like the host is next to you or that you are in the stadium. Now, as far as listening to music and all that, separate bass and treble controls can be adjusted to your perfect pitch, whatever it is you want to hear. You can immerse yourself in tremendous audio clarity. It's wonderful. Now, of course, why I love it, though, it's simple, just like everything Bob Crane has developed. The reception capabilities of this radio just magnificent. Whether you're trying to pick up AM or FM, things that you will not pick up on your standard radio will come in clear on this. Now, it's not magic. It won't pick up things that aren't there in the atmosphere over your head. But if it is and other radios are struggling to pick it up, man, the CC Radio 3 will sail through it. But not only that, it's got great emergency capabilities, NOAA weather, the weather alarm, and a 2-meter ham band, which is a lot of fun as far as that goes, a clock, a dial light, a timer, an alarm, and all the things you would want. Yep, they give you a power cord, which is fine. But if you put in a set of batteries, you'll get over 170 hours on this radio, which is pretty amazing. Go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. If you can't, give them a call, 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. But if you can, go online. Not only great products, great information about radio, a real repository. You look at that CC Radio 3, you tell them Raleigh sent you, ccradio.com from WGN Radio.
Since that year ago, glad that you're still here, 'cause I love you so. Ooh-ah. 1 year ago today, yes, we made our vow. Your love, I'm glad to say, I've cherished up to now.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, it's the Five Satins, our anniversary, 1957 on Ember, one of my all-time favorites, and certainly my favorite Five Satins record. That's a long list. Played it because Fred Parris would have turned 90 tomorrow. Yep, born in 1936 in New Haven. And, of course, he not only sang but wrote in the Still of the Night, so there was no pity party for him in terms of royalties. He was with us until 2022 and was 85, died in January, right after the new year, and was not ill long because he'd been performing up till then. So rest in peace, Fred Parris, and thanks for our anniversary. All right, so it's Wednesday, which means Jim went to the retinologist in Richmond. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How did it go?
Hi, Raleigh. I didn't go to the retinologist, but I have several subjects I would like to give you an update on.
And I'm ready.
It's funny. I got the hiccups now.
Oh, geez. Oh, I hate that.
But number one, last Thursday, you and Fran were talking about me. And thank you, Fran, because when the next day, we went shopping, and my friend got very upset going through the store and everything. And recently, she got a new phone. Her and her daughter are on a plan with her son-in-law, and they got all new phones, and they had to reprogram him. And she goes, "That's it, I'm done." Right in the middle of the store, she goes, "That's it, I'm done. I talked to my daughter. We're going to," she explained everything on the Walmart app. And from now, I'm sorry about the hiccups. It just started a minute ago. But she said, "We're going to, from now on, I'm going to order the stuff from Walmart and send it to your house." And she goes, she's leaving like April 15th. To go at the campground anyways, and she that's how we're going to handle it from now on.
All right.
So this Friday, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, and I just wanted to let Fran know that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know. She never listens.
Oh, yeah, no, and she, Fran's on hold. We'll talk to her later. But, of course, this is a start, but you need to get to the point where no one has to do anything for you because... and
I can't do it.
Well, you're going to... Just wait a minute. You're going to have to because you're going to exhaust all your friends. No one will help you indefinitely. No one. And
right,
so
right.
That's the message Fran's trying to give you. And so when you say you
right.
can't do it, what you have to say is, I need to find a way to do it. You have to realize,
right.
and until you do that, you're going to wind up really behind the eight ball if you don't get to a point where you can be self-sufficient before everybody abandons you, and they will.
Right. And
<Sounds good.
laughs> I can't handle these hiccups. But I'm just letting you know that, you know, even though she's going to be up at the campground all summer, she's going to order all my food and have it sent to my house.
Right, but that's fine for the moment, but it's not okay. You're going to have to find a way to do this yourself. You've got to.
Right. And then secondly, with this colonoscopy coming up, I saw a commercial on TV where there is a new blood test.
It's not, your doctors will not say that's sufficient. I mean, at the very least, we've talked before, get some help and do Cologuard, and I know you need help with that. But
right.
you know,
I have Cologuard.
Yeah, well,
and
get somebody
and
to help you.
I talked to my office with my primary doctor, and only talked to the nurses, and she said, go through Cologuard. And I said, I went through Cologuard again. And in the past, it said I was negative. And they looked it up, and it was 2020 that I was negative.
Yeah.
But then I go, I can't do it. I can't bring it to you and let the nurses do it because I would be too embarrassed. So I said, can I get this new test? And she talked it with the, she took all the information down and talked it with my primary. And my primary called me back later and said, I'm sorry, she doesn't know anything about this new test. And she's going to look at it, look into it, and call you back
all
in 2 weeks.
All right,
and I go, in 2 weeks, my colonoscopy is being... scheduled. I do not want an answer before that. I want the blood test before there. Because if the blood test says that I'm negative, I'm not taking the colonoscopy. But if the blood test says that I'm positive, then I'll do the colonoscopy. And she says, well, I'll have to get back to you. So that was, you know, the end of that discussion. And then on the next discussion is I've been in negotiations in changing, I'm sorry, I apologize for my hiccups, but in so far as changing the insurance on my house, I've been back and forth between one company charging me $1,600 and the other one charging me $800, and I got that all settled. But then today I got a letter in the mail from a place called MARQUIS. And in that says, something happened with your bank. And, you know, the bank that I have the loan with is just a loan. And it said, you know, you're subject to, we have your name, your address, and your, your social security number and your bank number. And, you know, then they were offering me protection. I was wondering if you ever heard of this.
I have never heard about it. And, as far as that goes, Marquis, MARQUIS is Marquis, and it can be a number of things. What else does it say beside Marquis?
It says you can sign up for protection.
Right.
Protection.
What's the rest of the company name?
That's it.
Okay.
Just MARQUIS.
Well, that just that tells you nothing. I can't answer that question other than I would not get involved with anybody who was soliciting me. I would go find them. So
And then my friend, her daughter came over today and read it to me, and she said, "I don't know about this, but I wouldn't deal with them."
Right. So I wouldn't. So throw it out. Throw it out. Just throw it out. End of story.
But they're threatening me that they know everything.
So, what do you care? And I would need more information. I'd need an address or something, or Marquee alone won't tell me anything.
Right, but there is an address and all that kind of stuff, but I can't read it. But you just read what the letter had said.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if you had known about this company.
Well, I do know their Marquee Software Solutions. Now, that has nothing to do with what you're saying, I don't think, but that they get involved when there's data breaches.
That's what they're saying. There was a breach in my data.
Okay. Well, that could very well be true.
Right.
That absolutely could be true. But
right. I don't know what to do.
You know, they're basically a software company. They're marketing compliance. But what you do, they should have told you where the breach came from.
No, they said one of your banks.
One of your banks? That's I would just throw it out.
Right, because I have the bank that I have my loan since about 2002 when I got my first loan for the property, and then my bank that I normally deal with, and then my friend who came to read the letter, she's the bookkeeper for the bank that I have. She goes, "We don't know nothing about this." So I just want to know if you knew anything about them.
Well, no, I mean, I know what Marquee Software Solutions is. They're basically financial marketing, and they had a data breach, and that was, last year, I think, about 500,000 customers, and it affected people in a variety of banks and credit unions. And so, in terms of that, it very well may be true, but, in terms of what are you going to do about it, well, I would never respond to that kind of a letter, but I would contact all the people I bank with, and as far as that goes, and ask, has there been a data breach?
Okay, I thank you.
Yeah, that's
And there was one other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, but I forgot it already.
Well, that's all right. The half hour is moving along fastly, and I got Bob at Master Control saying, play commercials, so I think I will. But when you think of it, you call us back.
Okay, thank you, Raleigh. You're wonderful.
Okay, talk to you soon, I hope. All right, so 888-876-5593, WGN Radio.
Today I sat alone at the window, and I watched our little girl outside at play with the little boy next door. Like so many times before, but something didn't seem quite right today. So I went outside to see what they were doing. And then the teardrops made my eyes go dim, 'cause I heard him name again, and I hung my head in shame when I heard our little girl say to him, "I don't want to play house. I know it can't be fun. I've watched Mommy and Daddy, and if that's the way it's done, I don't want to play house."
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It got her a Grammy, and that was Billy Sherrill at his finest. He and Glenn Sutton had written that, and I think had a lot of fun doing it. It was cut at Columbia Studio B, and Billy produced it, and he was just masterful, is all I can say about that. And that was Don and Beloit's request. So, speaking of that, Don and Beloit, he also wants to hear Apartment Number 9, which, by the way, Johnny Paycheck co-wrote. But Don and Beloit, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, happy Wednesday, Raleigh.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for playing all of our requests, including mine. That's great. That's cool.
My pleasure.
I know we all know over the years you really like your muscle car, so I thought I'd look up. You were talking about 1966 the other night, if you remember, especially the first year of the big Pontiacs, right?
Yeah. And of course, 66 also, that wonderful Oldsmobile Toronado debuted.
That was front wheel drive, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And it had that wonderful speedometer where the dial was stationary and the numbers moved. Loved it.
And the fuel gauge moves.
Yeah, well, there's that.
I sent you an email about, I just thought I'd look it up. I just picked Philadelphia because I thought maybe you were there. But the 1966 Philadelphia Auto Show was really quite the show. And I saw some of the highlights of what, like Chevy and the Chevrolet SS396.
Oh, sure.
The turbojet V8 special high performance, only for Chevelle and a couple other things.
Yep.
Yeah.
There were a number of things. I didn't go to that show in 66. And actually, Philly never enthralled me the way that Detroit or Chicago or Miami did. I'm not sure why.
Okay.
But I was at several of the Philly auto shows, and they'd been around since, the start of cars, like 1902 or something. But
that's right.
Yeah, no, New York is older than that. But those were, among the oldest. But it just, I don't know, it's all right. And 66, there was a Lotus that was interesting. I remember that. And so
the Elan.
Yeah, the S3. Yes, absolutely.
They came up to your lower thighs and fell to the ground.
I just blew the brakes, so hang on. Don't go away. All right. So, yes, and Bob did the right thing, and he's playing something else. And not me on WGN, but we'll be back to it right after the news.
Forget about your Hemis and your GTOs. I've got a new machine, and she really goes. When I pass you on the drag strip, you'll know darn well. Been beaten by a porcupine, V8 Chevelle. Tacking it up now, you better be quick. Nothing can outrun my SS396. Lots of chrome goodies sitting under the hood. She looks real pretty like a tough one should. On a red line tire, she sits real mean. She's the coolest hot one you've ever seen. Cruising the highway, I get my kicks. Everybody's digging my SS396. Look at her go. Bucket seat. When the four-speed tranny is starting to whine, we'll know that the super sport wants to get off the line.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, Paul Revere and the Raiders, I don't know how much they had to be paid to do that, but it was probably a lot, came out on Columbia Special Products originally in 1965, and then they re-released it in 67 with the flip side being the Circle doing Camaro, I'll spare you, and we're talking to Don and Beloit about SS-396 and other things, so there you are.
Wow, Raleigh, that was great. The 66, as I sent you something, Chevrolet just went all out those years. In 66, they advertised a lot on Bonanza and Bewitched, mm-hmm. I guess going crazy to drive sales up on that.
Sure. Sure. Well, it, you know, the muscle cars were there, and Pontiac was the... And it's interesting because, of course, they were owned together, for God's sakes, but Pontiac was the big competitor. And so...
Right.
Yeah, Chevrolet had to do something, and that's what they did.
DeLorean, and of course, Lee Iacocca involved at Ford, I guess, later. Well, 66 was special. The Spectrum opens up in Philadelphia the next year in 67.
And it's gone now, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a little bit bigger than the old convention hall.
Yeah. Yep. No, it opened. I think it actually opened in September 67. And it was in South Philly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, indoor arena. It was a Spectrum was a very big deal for years. I think the last thing, the last thing, God, it's been like 2009, was a Pearl Jam concert. So, yeah, so, of course, you know, what was happening, of course, the Philadelphia Flyers, the expansion of the NHL, hockey you know so well.
From six. The original six, that was the year that expanded finally.
Right, and that is why, more than anything else, the Spectrum was around, you know, built to be the home of the Flyers. And also the Sixers, the 76ers were going to be playing there too, but it was the expansion of the coming Flyers that caused them to do it.
Yep. And 76ers still play it at that old, your old convention hall. So it's so classic, that old classic, old giant armory looking kind of building.
Well, South Philly, yeah.
It had only held 96 for basketball games there. Well, I just thought I'd ask you about 66 in general with all those cars and if you'd gone to some of those shows. But, yeah, it makes sense. The Chicago and Detroit would be more exciting.
Probably. Yeah, they were. But, you know, everybody did a good job at those auto shows for the most part. And the only thing, of course, that was so sad is they'd have so many wonderful concept cars that would never come to fruition. It's like, don't tease me like that, you know, and then the cars never come out.
Right. That was the year of the Dodge Polara 500, for example.
Yeah, and where's that today?
Right. Well, it's terrific talking to you. Anything old Philadelphia, old cars, it's always good.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, good to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. And, of course, the Polara itself existed. You know, I think that started in 1960, and it was Dodge's top-of-the-line full-size, as I recall. I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, but I don't think so. 888-876-5593. David in Muskegon's got advice for Jim. What you going to say, David?
Yes, I'm totally blind myself, Jim. My name is David, and I want to tell you something. Nobody's going to read your mail or help you make sure that your house is clean for free. You're going to have to pay somebody. And your best bet is to go to Adult Services for in-home help. They're going to have an eye report and know your age. And that is in St. Croix County. And you also can utilize senior resources in St. Croix County, Wisconsin, because that's where you live. And you're also going to need some mobility training as well to get around, because you're going to have to learn how to use a white cane as well. That's another part of the equation for you. And those things right there are what you're going to need. And you're going to also need an income statement so that you can get in-home help service through either Adult Services with Department of Health and Human Services or Department of Social Services, whatever it's called, in Wisconsin, or Senior Resources. Here in Michigan, it's called Department of Health and Human Services. And in Wisconsin, it's probably called the same thing. And you're going to need to contact them. And your first question is going to be, what type of documents do I need? You know, like income statement, that should be number one on the list and have that ready. You go to Social Security and get that statement. And there should be paratransit service in St. St. Croix County, Wisconsin, that you can utilize also.
Yeah, he's aware of that. He's aware of what's available there. You know, thank God there's some things, but it's limited. All right. Well, good information. Thank you. Hopefully he is doing all of that and more. And you're right that you can't rely on people, friends and all that indefinitely because you'll wear them out. But there are many things, yes, you can pay people, but also you can go very far in learning how to do things for yourself if you take the time to learn it.
If you learn it like, traveling with a cane. Now, if you travel with a cane, you can go in the store and ask for help shopping. If you go to Walmart, it could be a problem sometimes, or Myers.
Okay.
You have to call ahead of time and tell them what you're blind and if you're going to need help with shopping and tell them what time you're coming.
All right.
And that's what he's going to have to do.
All right. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the information.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So, yeah, a number of things available, but it starts with deciding that you're never saying, I cannot. Yeah, you can. You just have to figure out how. All right. 888-876-5593. Full board of calls here. So I'll try to be less verbose, so to speak, and more requests, like one coming up on WGN Radio. Seneca's request, that was Is, and that's what it says on the label IZ, but obviously Israel Kamakawa, exactly, 2005 on Mountain Apple. And speaking of Brian, I believe he has other requests, which is fine. We've got his West Montgomery coming up as well. So let's see. Brian, welcome back to WGN Radio.
And it's great to be here. The thing I like about Is's version is that... it is a bit moving in a different way from when Judy Garland debuted the song in the movie The Wizard of Oz.
Absolutely. And, of course, it was...
Which actually ties it...
It was put out as a medley.
There is a version where he does Over the Rainbow by itself.
Yeah, it's on the same release, but the big thing that was pushed was that medley. But, yes...
But my comment for tonight was actually to do with one of your requests from yesterday, Vince Guaraldi's Cast Your Fate to the Wind.
Yeah.
That was on Fantasy in 1962. It was his greatest hit outside of cinema and television. And it's also what got him into TV, because when that came out in 1962, it was... An amazing crossover hit, and one of the people who heard it was Lee Mendelson, who was a producer first for a unreleased documentary called A Boy Named Charlie Brown. And then he became the producer for all the animated Charlie Brown cartoons. And Giraldi's work was on all of them, certainly until he died in the mid-70s.
Absolutely. No, it's true.
And
now, what's really fighting words are, I actually liked the Cameo Parkway Sounds Orchestral version better. They came out in 64 of Cast Your Fate to the Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot better. So, yeah. But there it is. And, of course...
Yeah, and one of the other things is that he discovered even before his aunts couldn't dance, fantasy would sign your paychecks only on a court order.
Yeah, well, there
he
is.
He discovered in around 1964, 1965, that he was being paid only 5% royalties from all of his albums that he'd recorded for fantasy, and...
Right.
He took him to court, and he left right as Ants was coming in.
Unfortunately, as you well know, that was more common than not back in the day. Royalties were very optional, to say the least. So it didn't have to be fantasy. I mean, it could have been roulette. Hell, you ask for your royalties there, they kill you, you know, and on it goes. But very few people were good payers. Atlantic is about the only one I know that Ahmet Erdogan was pretty good at paying royalties. Oh, yep.
Okay.
You know, of the independents. Now, this is not the same as the majors. That's a whole different thing where they've got a team of lawyers and all that. But back then, most of these labels were, you know, independent businessmen. And almost all of them felt that you shouldn't be asking for royalties because, after all, if they make a hit, then you're getting more for your personal appearances and you should be paying them. So I don't agree with the logic, but that's what they were operating under.
Well, when they were lucky enough to find people who didn't know better and went along with it, of course, you know, there's about two sides or more to every story because, you know, whether you're an independent or a super biggie like Columbia or RCA, the recording company makes money off the hits, only the hits. All the session players and all the expenses on the misses, well, they get to eat those because there ain't no money.
Well, right. Now, of course, at this period in time, when we're talking about the independents and stuff, there's very little money in the recording, but the majors had an evil trick, I felt, and that was that, let's say you had five misses before you had a hit. You had to recoup all the money it cost them to make those misses before you would get a royalty on the hit. So that was standard contract language.
Well, that explains the unplayable hits by Phil Spector and the Rolling Stones, I suppose.
Yeah, well, then you have a whole other thing going on, absolutely. But yes, that's sadly, it was not a clean business. Not start to finish, it wasn't. All right, well, that left you speechless. I'll get your Wes Montgomery as well.
Sounds great. Talk to you later.
Okay, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And, I do these themes for Monday night. For our bumper stumpers, and I might as well tell you about this because I don't think I'm going to come up with 11, but I was going to, the theme was going to be artists that Moish Levy of Roulette had killed, and I came up with at least half a dozen names, but I couldn't come up with 11, so I immediately called Val Shively, can you think of more? And so he said, you're not really going to do that, are you? I said, I am if I come up with 11 records, but I didn't. So, but who knows? I'll keep you posted on whether I do. So we'll pick it up right there after the news right here on WGN Radio. Thank you. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Corla Pandit. We're talking with Isaac about Corla. It's quite the story, but the fact that he did Miserloo is also of interest. One of the more interesting songs because it has probably 300 versions. Harry James and his orchestra had it out in 1941, but when Dick Dale and the Deltones did it, it became like the quintessential surf music record, and then everybody, including the Beach Boys, covered it. And every Santo and Johnny and the Challengers and the Surf and Johnny and the Hurricanes and Bill Justice. Vince Guaraldi actually did it after Dick Dale and all that, and on it goes. But anyway, Corla, which we sort of told the story when we were talking with Isaac about it, but it was one of the better scams all the way around. And Corla was actually John Redd. He was an African-American and from the Midwest, Missouri. And he claimed, however, he reinvented himself as Corla Pandit, a French Indian musician from New Delhi. Now, a number of things happened. For one thing, he had gotten married, and he had to get married in, sadly, in Tijuana, because interracial marriages at the time were not legal. And his wife, a former Disney artist and dancer, was a roommate of his sister at the time. And so anyway, they go to Tijuana, they get married, and so you have interracial marriages that are illegal in California, and you have this couple, and I'm sure together they're thinking, all right, what are we going to do? Well, they invented the name Juan Rolando, and he actually, as Juan Rolando, was able to join the Musicians Union, because the Musicians Union would allow Mexicans, but not African-Americans, I kid you not. So meanwhile, he gets a job on KMPC playing the organ, and as Juan Rolando. But then you get a new persona. They thought that there could be more exotic appeal if he'd just pass as an Indian, because most Americans knew nothing about India. Yeah, sort of like the Strangeloves claiming they were Australian. So he took the name Corla Pandit and had an elaborate history, which, by the way, both of his sisters later said, nah, you know, no way. But so he was born in New Delhi, supposedly to a French opera singer and an Indian Brahmin government official, raised in an upper-class Indian household, who studied at the University of Chicago. And obviously, Google wasn't around and facts were hard to check. So he created background music for an occult adventure series on the radio, Shandu the Magician. And so that had been on before and it was coming back. So he was using a Hammond CV, actually, and then became an organist on a lot of radio shows that were on television, things like from restaurants and stuff like that. And it was interesting that, of course, he looked, he wore the turban and the whole bit. And, of course, he couldn't really speak, because if he did, you'd know he wasn't an Indian. How exactly he became friends with Paramahansa Yogananda, I don't know. Self-realization fellowship. You would think that, Paramahansa would see through that in a heartbeat. But nonetheless, apparently, Yogananda wrote an introduction on the liner notes, one of his records. And he played at Yogananda's funeral. And, I mean, this is, really big stuff, the Self-Realization Fellowship. This is no slouch organization. In any event, this was good timing by the latter 50s, because, of course, Americans were starting to embrace spirituality and Eastern religions and all that. And so he was just perfect, really. Although in 67, they moved to Vancouver. And the reason for that was real simple. He didn't want his sons drafted to the Vietnam War. And but he'd regularly come back to Los Angeles for work, and you could see him. And I remember this so well, the early 70s. You could see this guy at like department stores or pizza restaurants or, supermarket openings, you name it. And apparently he was around in the 90s. His career was somehow revived, and I don't know the death of that, but he died about 1998. He was 77 years old. But it was just the best scam. And finally, the Los Angeles Times wrote about it long after he was dead. But so we had Isaac ask about Corla Pandit. But when I when I discovered that clip of him playing Miser Lou, I'm like, this is too good to be true. Because as I say, Miser Lou, one of those things that starts big band, winds up being the, to this day, the quintessential surf music record is Miser Lou. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And John is in Covington. Speaking of water, I think we're going from surfing to swimming pools. Hello, John.
Hi, Raleigh. I don't expect you to have the answer, but if you do, great. And if you don't, maybe one of the fellow listeners will. Okay, here's the deal. We're having a above-ground swimming pool put in because I want to do a lot of entertaining this year, for one. And for two, how do I say this? Well, the cancer, when I was first diagnosed, okay, I met with the oncologist, and she said, you're not leaving here. You're having an operation. It affected my spine. The cancer got into my spine, okay? I have two metal rods in my back, okay? I'm on... oxycodone. I get 180 pills a month.
Oh, God.
And they're well needed. But at any rate, since I've quit smoking, I've gained 50 pounds,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yep.
So what I want to know is, what with the glaucoma as well, I can't really, I walk with a around the house, I walk with a cane.
Okay.
Outside of the house, I walk with a rollator.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that?
Of course I am. Absolutely. Rollators, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So so I can't do that. I can't do that outside because, like, on my sidewalks, the whole street, it's uneven.
Yeah.
Okay? The cracks and,
yes.
you know, one person might have.
Yes.
It's just not. It's just not fair. It wouldn't be pretty.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So what I want to know is, win or lose, I just thought I'd ask, do you think maybe I could take a percentage off of the cost of that pool?
Okay. You're talking about for taxes?
Right, exactly.
Okay. Here's the answer. You have to get it in the form of a prescription from a licensed physician. If you have a prescription, you can deduct. If you don't, you cannot. And so what you have to do is find a doctor who's a friend or whatever who will write a prescription that aquatherapy would be helpful for you, and he suggests you put in a pool.
Yeah, and believe me, I'm not looking to take the whole thing off.
Well, no, I understand that, and you know, I'm obviously no CPA, and I'm God knows I know nothing about the IRS firsthand, thank God. But what I will say is that traditionally the rule is simple: if a physician writes a prescription, then it's deductible. If they don't, it's not deductible, even though it's the exact same thing. And so you might check with a CPA if you have a friend who happens to be one. And the other thing is, you know, your friendly neighborhood doctor to write it up so that you have something where if there's ever an audit, you know, because the thing is, you can file anything you want on your income tax. The question is just, can you defend it if there's an audit? And
yeah.
So that's why you want the prescription and you want to know everything in advance that it's okay to do that.
Well, thank you, Roy. You did a great job explaining it to me. And by the way, since I got you on the line, if you didn't want to play center field, that's fine.
Well, actually, I have center field coming up next.
Oh, you're awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to suggest if you didn't want to do that, you could do Gary Cashman.
No, but
you're awesome.
Yeah,
thank
I've got
you.
Center. It's right here. Absolutely. John Fogarty, center field. You'll hear it next right here.
You're awesome.
Okay,
thanks. You, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. Yep, one of the many requests, and center field, of course, John Fogarty, and that was on Warner Brothers, by the way, 1985, so long after he got out from the fantasy mess, so we will play that, and we'll get back to your calls in moments here on WGN Radio. We'll be right back. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's for John and Covington. Absolutely 1985, John Fogerty, Centerfield. Okay. Talking about Carla Panett, one more thing before we move on, and that is his own family. Obviously, his wife knew. In fact, she was involved in the deception in creating Carla Panett. His own kids didn't know it. That's right. In fact, at one point, someone confronted one of the kids and said, you know, no, your dad was African-American. Oh, no, no, he was Brahmin Indian. Believed it. And I'm pleased to say that that daughter died before the real real unmasking. The articles had been out there, but later there were documentaries and stuff like that. And she was gone and didn't see that. But yeah, Carla Panett. By the way they explained Juan Rolando, because of course that was known, was that his real name was Carla Panett, but it was using Juan Rolando to get by. All right, obviously his name was John Red, and he did very well. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And we have Jeff in Beloit. Welcome to WGN Radio.
How you doing, Raleigh?
All right, how about yourself?
Doing all right. Say, last week you were on a topic of people having colon problems and then taking medication for it. And a couple years ago when I worked at McDonald's, I had a problem with my colon. And for a week, I was going to go to the doctor, and I figured out what it was, and it's kind of a strange thing. I was working at McDonald's, and I worked in like 25 different restaurants.
Okay.
And working on a grill or a fryer, let's go to a fryer, when it gets filled with breadcrumbs, you have to either filter it or change it out.
Okay.
So you open up a valve, you put it in a 5-gallon hot big pot, and then you hike it out to the grease dumpster, and you put it in there.
All right.
And now when you boil out the fryer, here's the bad thing. What they said that they used the grease for was either cosmetics or to adhere dog food together.
Oh, God.
All right, so here's the thing. When you clean out the fryer, sometimes you boil it out. You have a chemical that you boil it out, and then what do you do with it when you're done? You throw it in the grease dumpster. So here's lipstick. I don't know if they still do it, but here's lipstick being made, dog food being made with a boil out chemical in that grease. Now, I don't know if they still do that, but I think more people are buying that to make biodiesel and make a conversion on it.
Uh-huh.
Now, moving to McDonald's, I worked there, and then at night I had to clean the grill. And then they had this apparatus. It's like a long blue 2-foot scraper, like an ice scraper.
Right.
You scrape your ice on your car window. Now, on the end of it had a Brillo pad. Now, they had some really good grill cleaner. You didn't want to breathe it. You put that stuff down, and boy, it'd take the wind right out of you. So you put that down, and it lifts up the, if you leave the hamburgers on too long, they'll like, make charcoal. It's a mess. So you got to clean it up. So you scrape it with this tool. And then when I got done, I put it and hung it on the wall. I got a spot for everything. And then at the end of the day or the next morning when I go to use it, I look and there's grease all over the floor with that cleaner on it too. It's on the floor. And if I had to mop it up, you know, then it goes in the mop. You got greasy cleaner and everything and your mop. So what I did is I would put it in the mop sink and just let it drain out. All right. Well, I'm trying to make a long story short.
So right, because by the way, I'm getting super nauseous here. Oh, my God. I know. That's what I mean. I can tell. I can feel it in my bones. Something is coming. So hold on. Don't go away, and we'll talk about it right all after right. The news right here on WGN Radio.
A rose must remain with the sun and the rain, or its lovely promise won't come true. To each his own, to each his own, and my own is you. What good is a song if the words dreams don't belong, and a dream must be a dream for two. No good alone, to each his own. For me there's you. If a flame is to grow, there must be a glow. To open each door, there's a key. I need you, I know. I can't let you go. Your touch means too much to me, dear. Two lips must insist on two more.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. There's probably 120 versions of that or more, but the original was Eddie Howard, and it was Denise who had requested we play that. Yeah, because I played a Eddie Howard record that was just awful and had nothing to do with Eddie Howard. He was great. It was just a bad song. And Denise called, and she told me some great Eddie Howard stories, and I said, sure, I'll play To Each His Own, which is one of those wonderful songs that everybody and their brother has done, including the Times, you know, you name it. But the first release was Eddie Howard. Now, the most interesting story about this song, as far as I'm concerned, if you look at the label on Majestic, it'll say, From the Picture to Each His Own. And this was a movie, 1946, Paramount Pictures, romantic comedy, drama type thing, To Each His Own, Olivia de Havilland and John Lund. Here's the problem. The song was not in the movie, before, during, or after. It was written totally for exploitation purposes on what was a hit movie, but it was released, and as I say, nothing to do with the movie, but still became one of the biggest hits of 1946. And so, a great story. All right, I've delayed long enough. We're going to hear about the discarded Grease and more. Carry on, Jeff.
Okay, where we left off is scrapers that they hold about an ounce or two of grill cleaner, and where you hang them is really close to a filter pot. And what the filter pot is for is to filter the grease that goes for the McChicken, the chicken nuggets, the McCrispy, and on, anything with breading on, right? So they have to filter it so they don't have to buy any grease. And this filter pot has a big coffee filter in the bottom of it. And where this grill cleaner was dripping was really close to that. So I put it in the mop sink. It's way, way, way away from it. Anyway, I get changed shift to the morning, and I come in, and so somebody else clean the grill. And they put all that grill cleaner dripping off of that into the filter pot. All right. So I'm like, it's like, people are going to get sick. People could die, you know?
Ooh.
And so I tell the supervisor this, and they say, oh, it's got a filter in it, the bottom. You know, so you're going to drink eat food that has been strained through a coffee filter with all this really high-powered chemical in it. And, you know, they didn't listen to me. They're like, well, it's got a filter. So I go and I tell the manager, not the supervisor, the manager, same thing. Oh, it's got a filter in it. The other person said they were too busy to deal with me. And I'm like, wow. Right. So, but I got to back up a little bit. You get a free meal there every day. So I was getting a fish sandwich, a chicken sandwich, and my colon about had it. It was kicking me to death. I couldn't figure out, you know, maybe I had some bagged nuggets or something like that. And so I switched, you know, get a chicken sandwich. I mean, it's just a different product. No, I was just, for a week, just unbelievably sick.
Yeah.
So the grill cleaner was getting in the filter pot. You could see it draining in there, and I lifted up the filter. You could just see it. They never changed anything. So I ended up quitting the job and then calling the health department. But because I'm like, I am not going to cook in a place because I knew I was getting sick from that.
Did the health department care?
I had explained it to this young gal. You know, like, I was a long-winded story, but I wanted to give a good background so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I did the same thing with her, and she never called me back or anything. I actually sent her pictures of these blue-handled with the Brillo pads on it, and the stains in the filter. You know, this is what you look for. I sent her a picture. Look, this is what you do, is you look for this. And what they need to do is change all the grease and all the fryers with brand new grease and put those things in a different area. You know, this. Here's the thing. Every McDonald's is pretty much similar. So they have those things hanging next to the filter pot. And then how many other people from other stores, I mean, you got thousands of them, how many people are just going to stick it in the filter pot like this other young kid did?
Is this still the practice today?
I bet if you walked in there, I'd bet you 50-50.
Oh, God. And, you know, I mean, not to mention any names, because it doesn't have to be, say, McDonald's or whatever, but when you're talking about restaurants in general, the stories you hear are just horrific, and it's a wonder how we're surviving any of it. Our systems clearly are better constitutionally than we would expect. But so here was your poor colon. So after you stopped eating this stuff, how long before you felt okay?
It was probably about 4 or 5 days.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't months.
No, it wasn't good. it wasn't performing like it should, but it was livable. Now the thing is, it's not every restaurant like this. As I said, a lot of times you put the grease in it in a dumpster and it goes away.
Yeah,
this place is reusing it in the filter, and it's the proximity of the organization of how they had it. So it's just typically, it could be maybe a Wendy's, I don't know, but maybe somebody would have a different idea, like putting it above the mop sink and letting it drain out instead of putting it in your food.
Jeez. And yes, I understand that the protocol is to reuse the fryer grease multiple times by filtering it, not forever, but for not indefinitely, but for a while. But what you're saying is that when you're placing it close to things that are dripping chemicals, this is not a good sign, and it really makes you wonder why that change, which would be a simple change, hasn't been made.
Oh, and you, in the strong-headedness of these managers, that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, I just showed it to him. You know, you can take a look at this. That's chemical down there.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll tell you what.
You talk about pounding your head against the wall and you're making people sick. What do you do?
I can't begin to answer this as far as that goes. Hopefully things are changing and they're not doing that, but I'm not holding my breath.
But as I said, my point when I began, though, I mean, you said some people were having problems with their colon. I mean, this is just kind of a curveball, but it could be some place that you're eating and something like that happened.
Well, as far as that goes, you're right. I think that we're learning more and more. The old garbage in, garbage out applies to our digestive system even more than computers, in that what we eat has such a bearing on our health, and we don't know the half of it. And then you get into the thing, and I don't want to go here too much because it becomes very political, but the things that are allowed in our food supply and accepted as you know, as if not healthy, but certainly not non-injurious, I would tend to disagree. So it's hard to eat clean, but the people who have taken the time to do it, everyone I've ever talked to is feeling better for it.
Right. One other thing I thought I'd mention, because you said you do like McDonald's, they have meat there, the hamburger.
Let me back up and say I do not eat anything at McDonald's except their giant Cokes for the same price. I like that, regular Cokes, and fries with no salt. And I recognize, and I can tell you which ones, frankly, where I know they're reusing that oil. You can tell it. But other than that, I don't eat it.
Well, the fryer for the French fries is different because the one that they filter is going to breadcrumbs on it. So you're talking anything breaded.
Right.
Now, there's no breading on the French fries, so I don't know what they did for that. I think they just changed it out.
Whatever it is, yeah, I know. But you can tell. You can also tell because I'm a big soft drink drinker, Coca-Cola. I prefer the Mexican Coke at home, but you can't always get that. But how often do they clean those machines? Because I can taste it. You know, where I'll say to John, man, this place is dirty. I'm not drinking this stuff. And they should change it more than they do, clean it more than they do, and that's across the board.
Yes, yeah. I mentioned about the quarter pounders. That is stamped USDA beef, and it's good beef, and it's a 4 count, four okay. per pound.
All right.
That regular hamburgers are 10 of them to a pound.
Okay.
Now, the Big Mac uses two of those, so you're actually getting more meat out of a quarter pounder than you are a Big Mac. I have nothing to say bad about those hamburgers, but if you get sick and eating the fried food, I mean, that could be a
well, yeah.
I
agree wholeheartedly. If you are having any digestive issues, look at your diet in general. Go through it point by point, and you may find several culprits that are contributing. I agree with that.
Yeah, well, I made my point, and I hope I didn't discourage you from eating at McDonald's.
Well, no, but, I mean, I just wish they'd bring beef tallow back for the fries, but other than that, you know, as the Cokes are fine. I just pick and choose which ones I like for how often I think they're cleaning those machines. All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Raleigh. Have a good
day. So yes, indeed. And, you know, you can always get them to cook them for your fresh, no salt. But some of them, they have this, not necessarily McDonald's, it can be any of the fast foods or whatever, have this habit where they've kind of cooked them partially and then they just put them in the fryer for another minute or so to get them warm. And they say, you know, they're fresh and, oh, man, you can tell the difference. So 888-876-5593. It's 8888 Raleigh. Oh, we'll get to Andrew in Chicago. It's been a while. Looking forward to that. And we've got Mark in Aurora and Ruth in Gurnee and Cindy in Chicago and Fran is in Austin. All right. That's right. Attendance is taken right here on WGN Radio. Oh, and I'm just sitting here. I'm not even playing a bumper, but I've got a full boatload of calls, so we'll save it for after the news, and we'll see what Andrew in Chicago has to say for his bad self. It's been a while. How you doing, Andrew?
How are you? It's good to talk with you.
Yeah, what's up?
I have a question and then a story. So I'm going to ask the question, tell my quick story, and then I'd love to get your answer. So with your background, you've been all over the place. I'm sure you've met a ton of musicians and a ton of air personalities. Have you ever been excited going to something, an event where you thought you were, where you knew you were going to meet somebody, and then you find out afterwards that they're just the biggest jackass you ever met in your life? And I'll tell you what happened to us. I've played in a band, a 10-piece band, for 38 years. And we would play festivals and political events. And occasionally, we would be opening up for a larger act behind us. And we met some really great people. Some of the nicest people. Conway Twitty was one of the nicest people I ever met in my entire life. And we were opening up at a big event here in Chicago. Oprah Winfrey was there. The mayor of Chicago was there. It was a big 5,000 attendance event, and the Beach Boys were the headliner. So we're backstage, and they're feeding us, and we're eating. And I figure, you know, I'm going to go over and see if I can say hello to a couple of the guys. So I get up, and I start walking over, and the road manager for the Beach Boys comes up to me and says, "You turn around and sit down, mister, and don't get anywhere near them." And I couldn't believe how we were just shunned away like that. And then the guys in the band are all looking at us like I'm some kind of an idiot. And it just was a big disappointment that he'd had to act that way towards us. And, I mean, he could have handled it in a different way, but just curious if in your travels and everything, if you ever were excited to meet somebody and you did and you found out that they were really kind of just a disappointment.
Firstly, let me say I've heard the story about the Beach Boys. You're not the only person who's been disappointed, and even more so disappointed if you actually got to a couple of them, and I won't mention names. However, okay, in my case, not exactly, but something along those lines happened. And what, I mean, the guy was as nice as can be. That's not the part. All right, so when I got to Philadelphia, you know, this was just wonderful because all the R&B oldies and all that and all these people who that I just loved for years and all that kind of stuff. And I got someone at the radio station who says, Jerry Ross wants to be on your show. Well, hell, I almost fell down. I said, Oh my God. Jerry Ross to me, I mean, you're talking about the Sapphires. Who do you love? I mean, he's the guy who started Gamble and Huff and all this and, supposedly wrote all this stuff. And a lot of stuff that weren't hits were like my favorite obscure records, like Cicero Blake. And so I was so excited. I mean, I couldn't sleep the night before because, oh my God, this is a deity to me. Well, you can pretty much know what's coming. So I get him on the air, and within about 10 minutes, I discovered that the only records Jerry Ross remembered were the ones where he made a lot of money, like I'm Gonna Make You Love Me when the Supremes and Temptations did it. I would ask him about records that he'd have a blank look and didn't even remember that he put out. And, we became friends and all that, and I liked him as a person, but the bubble was forever burst because it's like, oh my God, these great, great things, and he doesn't even remember them. So that's kind of nice. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we were playing an event, and this guy walks up to us between songs and says, would you mind if I came up and sang a song? And typically we would always say like, well, no, we have a show. I mean, we do a show.
Yeah.
So, and so, the guy says, I'm Johnny Maestro.
Ah.
So he was in the audience at this festival and he came up on stage and we never played 16 Candles before in our life. ever.
Oh, sure.
But we muddled through it, and it sounded so great that when it got done, people were cheering so much, we did the first verse again.
Oh, and, that's great.
And he was so appreciative. He was so nice. And it just, you know, out of the blue. And then one other final thing about the Beach Boys thing. So before they go on, they make an announcement. Somebody makes an announcement. The Beach Boys request that there is no dancing done during their show. This is not a beach party. This is a concert. And we will not tolerate dancing in the aisles.
Oh, God.
How could you not want to get up and dance to that music?
Well, why would you want to deprive someone of however they wanted to enjoy it? You know, your fans are paying money to see you. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Well, I can tell you nobody listened to them.
Oh, I'm sure that's right, and good for them. Yeah, unfortunately, I've got a boatload of Beach Boys stories. Sorry that happened to you, but glad you got to know Johnny Maestro. He was a tremendous person. I loved him.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
All right, Riley.
Appreciate
the
call.
Night.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. And that's where we'll go to the news. I think we just did on WGN Radio.
You walk and talk and move around in circles. Your friends telling you you're doing fine. Oh,
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. Traffic, 1974. And that was Billy Bob who wanted to hear that on Island, Walking in the Wind. All right, so 888-876-5593. And let's see how much I'm screwing this up so that I can actually see if Fran is still awake. Are you still with us, Fran?
I'm still here.
Thank you, thank you. What's up?
Oh, not a whole lot. I've got a couple of requests, just a couple.
All right.
One thing I'd like to hear is Swingin' on a Star, the version that has, I can't remember who it is, it's Little Eva and...
Big D Irwin, One Moonbeam, Two Moonbeam, You Gobble! But yeah, okay.
You Gobble, yeah!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And this is an instrumental, so it's I like Theme from a Summer Place.
Oh, I love that song, actually.
Yeah. Oh, do you? Good.
I do. Man, it takes me right back to the summer in 1960 when Percy Faith, when it was played over and over and over. Absolutely. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, I do too. Absolutely.
And anything... I'd like to hear some D.D. Sharp that I haven't heard.
Oh, okay. All right, because there's a number of things by her that are really tasty that never got any airplay.
Yeah, so. I know you played some of them, and I thought, I got to hear more of that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I also really love that those Lou Rawls jazz, that kind of jazzy stuff. I like that.
That was the period of time I liked Lou Rawls. He really left me cold on that stuff from the 70s. Then they were hits. I'm not degrading it, but I just that mid-60s stuff that he did was really nice.
Yeah, I really like that. So, you know, whatever, if you want to play something from that, you know,
okay.
I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah.
As the song says, I'm leaving it all up to you.
Oh, God. Oh, Dale and Grace. No, we'll do without Dale and Grace.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, absolutely. But you probably know No Ordinary Guy, but What My Mama Said is one of my favorite D.D. Sharps. I don't know if you know that. Trying to think of what else would be really out there that you might not. And, of course, her I Really Love You is just one of the all-time great records.
I'd love to hear them.
All right, you will.
Any one of them you want to play.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know if I'm a big fast food. I mean, I'm fast food Fran, you know. And hearing that, it's like, oh, my God, I don't know.
I know.
I got really sick one.
I know it's
I know
like
I got really sick one time eating some fish at a. It's hard to find good fish and chips anymore, and it tasted great.
Yeah,
but man, I was miserable for about 3 or 4 days.
Oh yeah, I relate absolutely, and yeah, you hear those stories and you say, "I'm never going to eat that again." Yes, until I'm hungry and eat it again. So
yeah, oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to eat that anymore. It makes me sick. Oh, I got to have some whatever it is.
Yeah, yes,
like you with the Skyline chili.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I did that over the weekend too. I said to John, "I'm going to really regret this, but I'm going to have me some Skyline chili," and I did. And I really regretted it, but the whole time I was regretting it, I thought, I knew this was going to happen, and it's worth it. Won't happen again.
Yep.
Won't happen real soon, but it'll happen again.
Okay, well, I know you got a full board, so I will let you go, and
I'll catch you
later.
I will find something by D.D. Sharp next.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, because there's a number of such tasty things from which to choose. All right, so 888-876-5593 would be 8888-ROLLIE. And let's see, I believe that takes us to Mark in Aurora. Mark, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for staying awake.
My question tonight is about memory versus memorization. Let me tell you what I mean by that. When I listen to something in a more relaxed or passive fashion, it soaks into me very readily. People have accused me of having a videotape kind of memory, and my head, among other things, is a whole library of top 40 songs that I know in perfect detail. But if I know that I have to memorize something, like as in a choir, then it takes me forever to remember it. I can listen to it over and over and over again, and I had as an academic advisor way back when a psychologist who specialized in hypnosis, and he thought he could help me with this. But I wonder if you or your listeners might have any suggestion about how to make memorization as quick and facile as memory.
All right, well, a couple things come to mind. Firstly, I don't have any more short-term memory. I'm at that age where I just don't have it. It's gone. Yeah. But there was a time it was there. And like you, some things, even if you didn't want to remember them, they'd sink in like every word to "they're coming to take me away, ha-ha." You know, you just can't forget that, no matter how much you try. It's just there.
Yeah.
Well, all right, but the other...
I can play that in my head right now.
Oh, absolutely. Remember when you ran away and I could do the whole thing. And of course, the flip side, they just pressed it through so it's backwards. Anyway, the deal is that what I find with things that aren't natural, for whatever reason, is it all comes down to association. I can remember things if I associate them. And I'm very good with numbers. You know, I can remember people's phone numbers from 20 years ago. I don't forget numbers. But, you know, on the other hand, but that's really the only thing I know. Now, if there's somebody else who can help us, and again, I'm past the point of no return on this. Those days are gone. I just admit it. I'm a fossil. So,
it seems to me that knowing that I have to memorize something creates an anxiety which blocks my memory, whereas if I'm just listening to the radio in a relaxed or passive fashion, I'll remember songs like that. Not to the degree that Mozart did. He could go to a symphony and then transcribe the whole thing after hearing it once. I'm not quite that good, but... you probably wouldn't be surprised that sometimes I've had trouble going to sleep because a musical phrase that I didn't want repeating in my head.
Oh, of course.
Repeating in my head.
Oh, yeah, we all have that. Now, let's talk about Mozart briefly and very briefly, since I don't like classical music anyway. But remember, this guy died at 35 years old. All right. So he never had the aging process that the rest of us do, which absolutely will affect memory. So, he's a question mark on that because he didn't live long enough for us to know.
Well, he was an all-around musical prodigy.
Well, right, but he was still, when you're talking about memory and things like that, he was still in the ages where it was possible, not only possible, but probable to have that kind of a memory. But it is interesting that you remember well like a sieve when you're relaxed and not thinking about it. You would think that the hypnosis would have been helpful, but apparently it wasn't.
No, what happened was that Dr. Benner left the college before I could start having sessions with him. They were developing a graduate program in psychology, and he wanted to teach undergraduates. So he went back to his Redeemer College in Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay. Well, that's sort of a long commute, so we won't rule him in, but.
Yeah, I used to live up in Buffalo, so that was
not too bad, right? Not too bad at all.
I don't live there anymore.
Right, exactly.
I live in the Chicago area.
Yeah, so you got to find somebody else.
Yeah, but that seems to be the key, is somehow getting rid of the anxiety that says, I have to remember this.
Well, and that anxiety creates a mental block right there. It's like putting up a fence.
It sure does.
Yes, and that's true in general, too, for the most part. We don't realize, like the entire body-mind connection, how much the mental causation results in the physical symptoms that we have.
Yes.
So it's a direct line, absolutely. Now, of course, knowing that isn't the same as solving it, but sure.
Yeah.
But you're putting up the brick wall and asking why you can't get through it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what brought this on. What happened to me tonight happened one other time. It happened in college concert choir. I wasn't getting the music learned fast enough, which I have to do because I can't read it while I'm on stage. And so I was dismissed from the choir. Well, I was notified tonight by the associate pastor of my church that the choir director has decided that it just won't work to have me in the choir because she has observed me not stinging sometimes, and part of that is because of my ADHD. I mean, my mind will wander, and then realize, oh, I haven't been singing for 2 minutes.
Right, right,
but
exactly.
That's not always what it is. Sometimes it's because I frankly don't have it learned well enough.
And right.
I can listen to it many times over and still not get it learned because there's something in my brain that says, well, I have to memorize this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what you're doing. You're erecting the brick fence and asking why you can't walk through
it. Exactly.
So the
key, any listener,
have an idea. Yeah, let them call 888-876-5593.
Absolutely.
We'll take all the suggestions we can get.
And if they can't call tonight, I'd appreciate it if they would call between 11:30 and 1 Central Time.
All right, very good. Tomorrow night would be fine.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. Appreciate
Bye.
It. All right. So kicked out of choir. Hey, it could be worse. So 888-876-5593. We got Steve in Western Springs and Cindy and Ruth, and that may wrap it up tonight. I'm not sure, but if it does, there's always tomorrow night. And there is, I had promised, a D.D. Sharp record coming up next on WGN Radio.
Langa, langa, yeah, that's what her mama said.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So there it is, D.D. Sharp, 1965. It was a B-side, Let's Twine was the A-side, always getting her to do dance records. But I thought the B-side was just terrific. Didn't chart, of course. And Kenny Gamble wrote it and produced it. And she was married to Kenny Gamble for a while. And, oh, man, their divorce was not a pleasant one. And the upshot was Val Shively wound up with all of Kenny Gamble's gold records because D.D. didn't pay the storage fees on the storage locker. And so, hey, stuff happens. So 888-876-5593. And by the way, D.D. went on to a great career. I think she was a social worker, but whatever. Not music, but something else. And did very well in life. We've got Steve in Western Springs. Welcome to WGN Radio. We lost Steve in Western Springs. Oh, well, it was bound to happen. Steve, call me again some night. I sure would appreciate it. All right, so Cindy in Chicago, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yes, I'm wondering if you ever played Me and the Man on the Moon.
Yes, I did, actually, and I also played another song of a similar nature for you. But so I did. You missed it?
I didn't hear it.
All right. Well, let me... I can actually find those again fairly quickly, so let me... I had a lot of fun kind of making fun of it because there were some doo-wop records of the same ilk.
Okay.
Yeah, and
then,
so
I called the reference librarian, the one that's real nice, and she looked it up, and 200 million was cut from home health care. I don't know who that affects, But maybe that's why Ruth was talking so crazy. Maybe her whole...
Okay, I see. All right, well, there you go. And yeah, Me and the Man in the Moon, by the way, and I talked about it at the time, but there are, you know, like a couple dozen versions of that, and it goes back to 1928 with the Golden Gate Orchestra.
Yeah, that's the one I want to hear.
The Golden Gate Orchestra with chorus by Billy Murray. Okay, I can do that. Helen Kane was well known for singing that as well. And so, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I have another one. Making Whoopee, original one.
Oh, God. All right. What would the people say? What would the people do? All right. Let's see. Original. Okay, I can do that. But yeah, I played The Chaperones, The Man from the Moon, which has nothing to do with your request. But we'll get them both on again, I promise.
Okay,
thanks. Yeah, and so if you missed The Chaperones, that was a fine record, right? Somewhere. All right, well, I'm missing The Chaperones too, apparently.
Wait, doo-wop, 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 whoop, whoop.
Doo-wop, 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 whoop, whoop. Doo-wop, 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 whoop, whoop. Doo-wop, 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 whoop, whoop. Run, it's the man from home. I looked out my window and watched to my surprise.
Yeah, The Man from the Moon, having nothing to do with the 1928 song that we will play. And, yeah, the original Making Whoopee as well. Why not? We didn't get to a lot of requests, but we'll get to more of them tomorrow night. Got them all written down. I'm trying my best. Well, sort of. And that pretty much is it. But, all right, so I don't know if she's still waiting or what she wants to talk about. But let's see here in the waning moments to see if Ruth and Gurney is still with us. You still with us, Ruth? No, Ruth gave up. I couldn't blame her. And, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Ruth. Eventually, maybe we'll find out what the lion said, and if not, well, that's okay, too. Waning moments here. Full show tomorrow night, 3 big hours. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure we're talking about it, whatever it is. But Bob leaves us after tonight. We get Adam back. But Bob continues to send me the world's best links for stories. And we've all heard that dogs can smell diseases. And that led one writer to talk about the sense of smell in general. And, you know, it used to be the de facto deal that humans could smell 10,000 odors, but by 2014 we discovered that we can distinguish over a trillion unique scents. How about that? And dogs outsniff us by a mile. So as far as that goes, dogs have humans have 5 to 6 million olfactory receptors. Dogs have 300 million. What? Yeah, 40 times larger relative to its brain size allows dogs to detect just about anything. Odors in parts per trillion. That's why they're good at explosive or drugs or, as we're finding out more and more, diseases like cancer, diabetes. All right, your nose smells direction. Yeah, apparently humans can detect the direction of a scent using stereo olfaction. Each nostril possesses slightly different odor concentrations, which makes sense, of course, because same thing with your eyes, it's slightly different colors and all that, but not quite as precise as animals, but studies show people can track scents across open ground. Now, of course, as you know, many viruses will absolutely kill your sense of smell. That a lot of news when COVID was going around and people were all, you know, I don't have a sense of smell. No, any virus could do that. And I lost mine in 1986 after quite the virus and never, ever came back. What's most interesting about that is doctors don't care. You know, as far as that goes, you know, you go to people, well, just be glad. You know, if it comes back, you're not going to like. Well, bottom line is it didn't. But for most people, most babies anyway, they've still got it. And they can recognize their mother's scent within days of birth, supposedly. And of course, you know, all about pheromones and attraction and all that. But did you know that scents manipulate behavior? Well, you might have heard that. But what you might not know is retail stores, some of them use scent marketing to influence customer behavior, you know, like pumping up baked cookie smells to make shoppers linger. And apparently pleasant scents can increase time spent in stores. So they're not trying to have everything smell like leather, though for some that, all right, we'll just leave it there. Yeah, some people smell in color. Yeah, synesthesia, where simulation of one sense involuntarily triggers another. And some people have a smell sense that causes them to see colors or shapes. It's a cross-wiring in the brain. A lot of people with sound as well. I know when I was forced to take piano lessons as a kid, I remember so vividly that middle C was a light blue. Yeah, when I first found out that this was a thing, that I wasn't totally crazy, I felt better already. Smelling peppermint boosts alertness, and we'll leave it there. So we thank Bob for keeping us on the air and for all those wonderful links. Couldn't do the show without him. We thank John for screening your calls, but above all, I thank you for calling. How about doing it again tomorrow night, 21 hours from now? Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.
Subsea smuggle, plus husband horror hoax, and foul field flood. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 news, real stories, real fun. Narco sub snatch, submersible smuggling shock on the Pacific coast of Mexico. Authorities say naval forces nabbed a shadowy narco sub, snatching staggering stashes of cocaine and seizing sneaky sailors steering silent shipments toward unsuspecting streets. Investigators report the low-riding lurker lugged multi-million-dollar narcotics before maritime muscle made the dramatic takedown. Now cartel couriers sit seized and sidelined, proving when smugglers sink into secrecy, the law still surfaces their slippery scheme. 911 set up shock. Panicked 911 pleas and phony panic performance in Ohio. Police say a husband hollered, intruder, claiming a shadowy stranger stormed the sanctuary and shot his wife. But detectives now declare the desperate distress call a staged story masking a sinister shooting. Investigators say blood-spattered signals and carefully crafted clues pointed not to a phantom perp, but to a familiar figure faking fear and falsifying facts. Now he's seized, shackled, and formally charged, proving when panic becomes performance, truth turns toxic, and the real break-in is betrayal. Sewage slider rue. Spring training stench at Yankees. Spring training in Tampa, Florida. A sewer line reportedly split at Steinbrenner Field, splashing smelly sludge through the Yankees clubhouse bathroom and pooling by concourses as fans sidestepped the sloppy mess. Staff sectioned off soggy spots and the skipper said it was all over the place. Cleanup crews scrambled because nothing says play ball like a foul ballpark full of foul water. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.